Okay, welcome to the Stage Left podcast, lifting the veil on the music industry by telling the stories of those with a unique vantage point. On this episode, I'm joined by Johnny Hartford of Sister Ray Records. Johnny joins me the day after the most important annual event in any vinyl collector's calendar, Record Store Day. Much like previous years, Record Store Day 2015 saw limited edition releases prompt queues to form in the early hours outside record stores worldwide. We'll be discussing how the record shop industry has drastically changed over the past 20 years, the future of how we consume music, and of course, the much publicised vinyl revival. It's a pleasure to have you here with us, Johnny. How's it going?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
Good stuff. Talk us through yesterday. How did it go?
It was great. It was, a really heartwarming experience. A lot of madness, a very early start, some very, very hectic serving. But awesome vibes. We had some great live acts in. And overall, I think everyone was very happy. Yeah.
Fantastic. What time were people queuing from? Was it an early one?
This year, this was our first one at this store in Shoreditch. I've done other ones at other stores. The first person I think was there at 4:30.
Really?
Yeah, that's not the earliest that I've known.
Really?
Yeah, but.
And is that because of the limited edition releases you particularly got on sale, or is it because of the hype of it, or?
Well, some things are so limited, and they know that stores won't have too many copies. So I think the only way to ensure you're going to get it is get there at an extremely early time.
Okay, and tell us about you had some live music and stuff events yesterday. Is that right? Some
yes. Live. Yeah, we had an all-female choir, a cappella choir.
Really?
20 girls, yes, called Deep Throat, as you do. And we had a couple of other live acts, a guy called Duke Garwood and someone called Riley Walker, who's fantastic, sort of up-and-coming folk singer. Very big fans of them, really, and especially Riley, whose new album is out, and it's just beautiful.
So talk us through yesterday. I mean, obviously you had a lot of people in through the day. Was it a bit surreal knowing that you're open most days of the year and everybody's coming in on this particular day?
It was designed to help us out in a record shops out in a time where it was very, very difficult. And I've been working in record shops pretty much for 20 years now, and it's been through many ups and downs in that time. Mm. I think it was designed to really give the shops a boost when they were at their lowest, and it succeeded in doing so. I think it's morphing slightly and becoming something a little bit different now, but it's still essentially the biggest day of the year for any record shop, I believe.
Absolutely. What particular special editions did you have yesterday who were people really queuing for at 4:30 in the morning?
Well, I mean, there were 600 or so,
wow.
Or maybe not quite that many different items available, and it's a difficult one. You just can't take them all. You know, we took about sort of probably about 280 titles, I think, out of that lot. And there was a real even spread, actually, this year. There wasn't particularly one thing that was the hot item. And to be honest, you never know that. You can never really predict what that item is truly going to be. I mean, last year there was some very odd things, like a Ghostbusters glow-in-the-dark 10-inch. I mean, that was just loads of people wanted.
Really?
And, there was a Carl Sagan 7-inch. I mean, some real.
Really?
One.
Oh my word!
This year there was a Stephen Hawking 7-inch.
Was it?
Singing Monty Python's The Galaxy Song, which was.
That was for when they got together at the O2, didn't they?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, yeah. That was. And there was things like the Moomin's theme tune on Fuzzy Felt 7-inch. Well, the 7-inch wasn't Fuzzy Felt, but the sleeve was.
That's crazy. Wow, that's. It's quite a broad. Broader spectrum than us.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously more popular
Stephen
things. Like the White Stripes released one of their albums on vinyl for the very first time.
Right, which one?
Get Behind Me, Satan.
Right, okay.
And it had one of those covers where, depending on how you look at it, it either comes up as Jack and Meg, or it comes up as completely two other people on the cover.
Really?
Yeah. Fantastic. So that was really good. For the last 20 years, basically since late 90s, I was at Rounder Records in Brighton for a long time.
Right, okay.
Which was the store that Norman Cook used to work at.
Right.
The boss of Skint Records used to work at. And it was frequented by people like Carl Cox and Dave Clark, like important people in that sort of dance scene at that time. So I sort of got involved there later on, and then...
So around that time, is that when it was starting to get a little bit tricky, like 2000s,
well,
or
in it, when we got into Rounder, it was in a terrible state, and we revitalised it, and we had tremendous success, to be honest, in the sort of early 2000s up to sort of some point in the mid 2000s, and then it started to go get a lot more difficult, and eventually, I mean, Rounder closed in 2012, but you know, times change, and now they're sort of, it's on a different sort of direction. Everything's a lot more positive. We've opened up this vinyl only store in Shoreditch, and yeah, it's going great.
It's crazy. I wonder what the secret is. So I've got some stats here. So around the time that the first Istaray record store opened, there was just over 2,200 UK independent record shops in the 80s. Now only 270 odd remain. Yet that figure's gone up because you've opened a new one that's vinyl only in Shoreditch. What was Sister Ray doing right, do you think, in that time period to keep them going where other stores went by the wayside?
To be honest, I think the concentration on vinyl still, because a lot of people moved on to CD, obviously, and CD is something that people, a new generation purchased that only, and they didn't know anything about vinyl, but there was those vinyl collectors that weren't going to change to CD, or might have done so fleetingly and then regretted it, which is something that I see quite a lot. You know, a lot of customers come in and they're quite regretful that they've sold their record collection and bought CDs, because now the CDs are essentially coasters to them for putting their drinks on, and they long to have their records back. So yeah, I mean, I think the concentration on that, really. I mean, because now it's swinging back to a point where I think the future really is files, downloads, and records.
Yeah.
And considering when you buy a record nowadays, a new record, the vast majority of them come with a file or a download anyway. You know, it's another sort of reason to buy vinyl, I think.
It's interesting kind of to think about, what are you actually buying when you buy a piece of music? Mm. Are you buying the hard copy of it, or are you buying the ownership of it? Because if you think, so let's say someone like Pink Floyd, so people would have bought vinyl of, say, Dark Side of the Moon, which is an obvious suggestion. Then they would have bought the CD version of it, or the cassette version, then the CD version of it, then possibly download it at some point as well, and now they're buying the vinyl of it again. It's interesting to kind of think, what are you actually buying? Are you buying the right to listen to the music, or are you just buying an actual...
Well, I think there was a court case in America with Bruce Willis, I believe, where he had purchased so much on iTunes that he found that he couldn't put it in his will to leave it to his children, because technically he didn't actually own the music. He'd only actually bought the license to listen to it. And that comes at a great contrast, I suppose, to probably my generation that got their father's record collection or their uncle's record collection donated to them as a youth, and often really set you on a path of discovery.
Yeah. And did you see this coming, this kind of vinyl revival as such?
Well, I certainly hoped, because I love the format. It's for so many reasons, really. I think I'm an object fetishist, perhaps, and I think many people are with vinyl.
Yeah.
Because it's a tactile thing. It's a piece of art on one level. It was a source of information when we didn't have the internet as well, the sleeve, the notes.
These
sort of things were studied in the time before the internet to get more information about the artist. And also you've got to physically engage with it. You've got to take it out of the sleeve, you've got to protect it, you've got to put it on the turntable, you've got to turn it over, you know, you've got to actually sort of engage with it in a way that just doesn't happen with a sort of file or even a CD. I mean, the artwork's so small, you don't really feel like you're buying anything. It's plastic, and you know also full well that the company that makes the CD is doing so for an incredibly massive markup. They're doing it for a matter of pence, and you're buying it for a huge amount of pounds.
It's interesting because you going back to when you were in Brighton, and there was obviously a bit of a peak, particularly I know having lived in Brighton myself, Norman Cook's kind of seen as quite an important person down there, particularly around the time you were there. When you were kind of things went a bit shaky and all these stores were shutting, did you worry about what you're going to be doing in the future in the industry, or did you fear for vinyl?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we had to. I mean, there was a point where we were essentially being screwed by some of the major sort of record companies.
How?
There was a point where some companies were selling CDs to supermarkets at a cheaper price than they were selling them to record stores, and particularly independent record stores. And also, when they were selling them to these massive companies, they're all on a sale and return deal, so they can return them anytime they like. So we'd find that, you know, CDs would be on sale at $9.99 in Woolworths or some supermarket, and for us to buy it would cost £9.17. So it was a completely unworkable situation. Yeah. So we had to sort of...
So what did you do? You know, what did the industry do then?
It started to get incredibly difficult, and shops shut on a massive, massive scale. And I think essentially the swing to vinyl is basically what has saved and reinvigorated this love for record stores. And I'd always hoped it was going to come. And I thought it was the only rational thing that could happen, but it had to go through. Basically, I mean, the whole industry's had a meltdown in the last few years. It's really sort of finding its feet of where it's going to go next, and that is a constantly morphing, changing thing with things like Spotify and now Tidal, and it's changing very, very rapidly. But you know, I'm positive that it's going to have something, a model that will work in the future, but I think at the moment it's going through an incredibly sort of testing and changing time.
Yeah, it's a confusing time, isn't it? I think people aren't sure where to turn in regards to kind of consuming and actually as artists themselves and that kind of thing. You've had situations where the vinyl has now got so popular that a lot of the pressing plants can't keep up.
Well, there's not enough pressing plants, and they absolutely can't keep up. I mean, this is one of the problems related to Record Store Day, in the run-up to the Record Store Day, because there is now so many items, and they're all coming together at once. I mean, the shops have to save the money to actually buy the stock, so they're not actually ordering enough in the run-up to Record Store Day, which knocks the distributor a little bit. And then also, there's the massive queue at the pressing plant. There's not enough pressing plants. I mean, there's one in Prague or one in somewhere else, you know. But there's just not enough to cope with the new demand for vinyls.
So. And they're going at 7 days a week, 24 hours
a
day.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a horrendous queue there. And basically, to get everything done in time for Record Store Day, lots of album release dates have had to go back. And essentially, lots of tour dates have had to go back. And the whole sort of machine gets affected again. Wow.
I've heard there's artists who are going on tour and they've planned tours and they're going out touring an album that hasn't been released, on vinyl. It's absolutely not the situation.
It does, at the moment we need more pressing plants, absolutely, to be able to cope with this, because it's still rising. It's rising every year. So far this year it's another 70% up on last year vinyl sales. So you know, we need more pressing plants desperately.
Do you think that will happen? Do you think there'll be some kind of major investor? Or
There's no sign of it happening.
Really?
but I think it needs to. But I'm not sure who who is going to do that? I suppose it needs a new company to start up. I mean, the ones that have been there for years.
Mm.
Someone needs to grasp that and run with it.
Plenty of opportunity there. I found an interview with Phil Barton, your colleague, and I think, is he the guy who founded Sister Ray, is that right?
Or no, he didn't found Sister Ray, but essentially he purchased Sister Ray. And also Round of Records.
Right, okay. And he said, there's an interview with him in 2011, he kind of sounded pretty downbeat at the time about how things were. He said, we're still trying to push the water up the hill, and he said he was looking to the Olympics in 2012 to kind of perhaps be an injection into the area and bring more vinyl sales, which, looking back in retrospect, sounds a bit kind of hopeful, you know, and touching the shores of it. So obviously I don't think he saw this kind of revival coming. And then within kind of 3 years, you're opening a new shop
in a vinyl-only shop.
It's crazy. And how much of a say do you get in? So you manage a shop, is that right?
Yes.
How much of a say do you get in the material that's in there? And I mean, if you look at your charts at the moment, there's obviously a lot of, you know, Knowles there, Weller's released an album that's kind of in the charts, McCartney, Bowie, they're prominently featured as well, as alongside, you know, you get a lot of newer artists as well. Who decides what stuff's going where and, you know, what you want to push the most?
I do. To be honest,
that's great freedom in a way. Brilliant.
I buy every record in the shop in every genre. I've got an enormous enthusiasm for music, always have. I want to learn. So, I mean, every record in there, whether it's in the jazz section or the folk section or the metal albums, I selected them all and bought them all, priced them all. Yeah, essentially, I kind of did that myself.
So you have quite a lot of influence.
I didn't trust anyone else to do it.
Yeah, but you have a lot of influence over what people are going to be, you know,
going. Well, essentially, no. Yes and no, because the customers also, I'm not going to keep restocking things that are not selling.
Yeah, that's
unless
true.
I'm absolutely in love with it and I think it should be selling. But yeah, I guess it allows me to have some influence. I mean, I also have to stock many things that I don't like. Absolutely. I mean, it's not a case of being a musical phenomenon. I do like the Movements.
You do like
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not a case of being like a musical sort of fascist or whatever, pushing my taste on other people at all. It's kind of stocking all the right things and letting the customers make the choice, and then for the ones that want guidance, helping them out and maybe suggesting new things to people when you know what their tastes are. And for me, it's an experience because I don't claim to. I mean, some things I'm encyclopedic about, and in some genres I'm not. For instance, jazz, and I actually went on a massive journey of discovery ordering the jazz albums for the shop because I've done it before and I know sort of what the classic titles are, and I've heard a lot of them, but I started to go a little bit deeper. You're not going to find these records in other stores, and I work quite hard at that because I think it's important to sort of have those records that are sort of real music. Geek and music fan, which is the kind of person that buys vinyl a lot of the time, not all the time, but a lot of the time.
So the vinyl revival is something that fascinates me. I've got a great quote here, which I think is an excellent summary of the revival. And it's not from someone in the music industry, it's not someone from a journalist or anything like that. It's actually from my mum when I said that I was interviewing you. And she said, I've spent 30 years trying to keep up with music and all this new technology, and as soon as I get up to speed, I read on my new iPad that now everyone's buying the vinyl records I owned 30 years ago. Which I thought was a perfect summary when I said that I was meeting you. So yeah, I remember listening to having parties when I was very young, and the family would come over and we'd stick on Sgt. Pepper's, obviously classic. That kind of thing, and it's all coming back in now. We're going to go through a few statistics here to kind of back up this revival. 900% increase in LP sales between 2004 and now. 9.2 million vinyl albums were sold in 2014. More than a million sold in the UK, that is, as well. And it's thought that it's mainly 18 to 24 year olds. Is that right?
Well, I mean,
this is on a survey from 2,000 people. I mean, it's mainly 18 to 24 year olds.
Yes, and also apparently that the major sellers of the biggest sellers of vinyl are Urban Outfitters, I believe.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yes.
And so Urban Outfitters, for those who don't know, it's a male closed store, is that right?
Yes, I mean, it's because of their, I think American stores sell a lot of vinyl than the UK stores do. Incidentally, they're mad because they're much more expensive than we are.
But, well, there you go.
But, yeah, I mean, and that's the accessibility, essentially. The record shop is not there in a lot of major high streets. In fact, in just pretty much all. But what is there for the person that wants to buy vinyl is some records overpriced in Urban Outfitters. So when they're off buying their jeans and T-shirt, they can pick up a copy of, you know, Nevermind the Bollocks or whatever. Can I say bollocks?
You can, that's absolutely fine. people said a lot worse. So that actually brings me on nicely, because I don't know if you know this quote from Neil Young, that he said the whole kind of vinyl revival is nothing more than a fashion statement.
Yes.
And he said, a lot of people that buy vinyl today don't realise that they're listening to CD masters on vinyl, and that's because the record companies have figured out that people want vinyl. Please tell me that's not true.
Well, part of what he said in the second part are true. I don't agree with what he said in the first part. But,
so the first part being that it's nothing more than a fashion statement.
I think that's nonsense, and I think that's a case of Neil being obstinate and contrary. Because you know what he's like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's famous for it.
Yeah.
Essentially. And it doesn't surprise me that he said that, if you know anything about the character of Neil Young. But essentially, you know...
good musician, though.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic musician. But if he wasn't so grumpy and obstinate, we wouldn't love him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, essentially.
And is it really true that a lot of the stuff we listen to on vinyl is CD masters?
Well, increasingly not so. There was a little stint of that from some of the major record companies who, I'll try and not name, but they treated this vinyl revival as a nuisance, essentially, because it cost them more money to make the vinyl as opposed to the CDs. They couldn't get the profit margins that they were getting when people were into CDs, and essentially they didn't take the necessary care, love and attention that is needed to satisfy the vinyl purchaser. However, they have been exposed for doing so on various internet forums, and there has been a change. And essentially now, if you see anything that is marked audiophile or remastered from the original analog tapes, then, you know, that's absolutely brilliant, and then it's got a great sound. So, I mean, nowadays, 9 times out of 10, that is the case. There is occasionally you get a reissue of an album that is remastered from CD, and then it's basically got a lack of bass and a treblier sound, and it doesn't sound as good, and it's like listening to the CD and it's rather pointless. But thankfully that's been driven out now. I think people are taking it more seriously, but unfortunately also the prices are going up. I mean, Neil Young's last album,
£40.
Yep, there you go. So that's sort of representative of the disdain Neil has for this, but you know, I think Neil could argue with a paper bag.
In this same survey, I mean, you guys obviously see the people coming in all the time. It said that mainly 18 to 24 year olds are driving the revival. Many are collectors, and apparently 34% of these 2,000 people surveyed said that they don't own or use a turntable. They use it as, it's like an investment, and they want kind of hard.
Yes, and I can understand that, because accessibility to turntables is still an issue. I mean, you've got actually Lidl are selling turntables at £50.
Are they?
Unbelievably. You can buy these horrendous turntables. I mean, there are some quality brands like Riga who are selling sort of decent, cheap turntables. And people are also sort of refurbing old turntables. But essentially, there is no one obvious place where people go and buy a turntable. It's one of the most oft-asked questions in the shop, in fact.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, essentially, I think that's it. I think there's something there. There's a problem there's a gap that needs to be filled. But I mean, I think a lot of those people are also just using the download codes that comes with those records. Mm. And a lot of people are framing them. A lot of people, they're fashion statements almost. Yeah. They have some sort of cachet that a CD you just would not have.
Yeah.
And essentially, so it works on several levels. It can be even seen as an investment, because they seem to hold their value, records. I mean, we're forever selling second-hand records, so you're getting some sort of feeling of investment, some feeling of artwork, some feeling of enormous cultural significance, and a plain old pleasure when you put the music on the turntable and put the needle on the record.
It's been compared, I don't know if you ever heard this kind of comparison, that I don't know if you know, in the 1970s, the Swiss watch company, Quartz, is that right?
Yeah.
Quartz, yeah. They had a massive dip when the Japanese kind of digital watches came along. Mm. And then kind of after a few years, people realised they preferred the kind of craftsmanship that was put into, and the kind of art and the engineering that almost went
absolutely,
into the actual,
yes.
And then kind of the company then had a kind of massive peak and they're back now. And it's,
well, that's right.
And the same thing's apparently happening with the fountain pen.
Right, okay, I could see that. I mean, you look at watches and you think, essentially everyone has a mobile phone now, so watches are essentially completely redundant.
Yeah.
But you still see watches, and then they're not people wearing digital watches, are they? They're people that are actually wearing sort of, you know, classic, multi, sort of incredibly complex functions of a, yeah, you know, the classic watch.
It's nice to see that kind of stuff kind of coming back in a way in this digital age. Going back to the point we were talking about, how people, a lot of new artists were going out on tours and then finding out that the vinyl wasn't going, the album they were promoting wasn't going to be ready to be kind of released on vinyl. Have large acts, you know, major record label acts, suffered the same?
Well, no, because the larger acts are going to get their record pressed no matter what. I mean,
yeah.
You know, there's a clear sort of pecking order there.
So, yeah, that was kind of what I was getting onto.
You've got to remember, these companies are not only producing, they're not only record companies, they're also, you know, they make films, they also, they're involved in all sorts. I mean, some of them have even been involved in weapons manufacturing.
What?
Well, EMI have, most certainly.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Elaborate.
But you know, I don't want to get involved. But you know, if you have a look on the internet and Google said things, you will find out about EMI's involvement in that. Yeah.
I thought the last time music and weapons had that crossover when the bugle was used to relay tactical information.
They're multinational companies, and they're involved in so many different fields, not just music, and essentially. It's pure capitalism. It's all about money, and when you're dealing with such a sort of culturally important, significant, you know, art form as music. I mean, I think the figures are I can't remember what they are, but they show that more people engage with music and are passionate about music than ever before. It's just that perhaps their money's not going into it because it's a time when music is free. But I think that's also a situation caused by the fact that these major companies with their profits at the fore have not had the art and the customer at their first thought. It's been about making money.
Always has been, I think. I mean,
absolutely.
It's really sad, but I mean, if you look at, I don't know if you know, in 1978, the Voyager, which was a spacecraft that NASA was sending off into space that would never come back, and there was a record player on there. Mm. And they wanted music from all over the world, from different tribes to kind of pop music, and the Beatles weren't included on there.
No.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because EMI couldn't work out how to maintain copyright on other planets.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Which is
that's a good one.
Totally crazy. Okay, we touched on prices earlier. So Paul Weller's new album is somewhere between £30 and £36. That goes to the same for, I think, Dylan's new album, which I think is the Sinatra's covers. McCartney's new one as well.
Not in our shop.
Not in your shop.
No,
oh, okay. So,
absolutely
so,
not.
So what kind of prices would you sell in your ones for?
Well, we're obviously, the prices are pretty much dictated by the price of the record for us to buy. And we just add our markup on top, but it's not quite that bad.
So that would be the record, that's the price that they're selling it for on their website, I'd imagine.
Oh, okay, that may well be the case. I mean, I think people will find it generally cheaper in stores. I mean, I don't think they realise that, essentially.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like that for the average case. I mean, you are getting albums that are coming out new and they're instantly for sale for £25, £30, but you're also getting new albums that are on sale for sort of £16, £17. And you can buy second-hand records for much cheaper amounts. This is it.
Yeah.
I mean, even some sort of original versions of classic albums second-hand are at the price of, say, I mean, Tom York put his album out there and it was £30.99 for a single vinyl album. There was absolutely... no reason for that.
Was that the Atoms for Peace one, or was that
Tomorrow's
solo one?
Modern Box is right. the latest solo one, and that's directly affected sales. But I can also sell, Marvin Gaye, What's Going On, or Curtis Mayfield, Superfly, some sort of classic sold out like that, and we knock them out at $11.99, $12.99, very accessible, and that's brand new.
$30.99.
Yes.
Of all people.
Well, yes. I mean, it's all right for
Tom. Come on.
It's all right for him to give his music away for free, but it's not sending out a great message for everyone else who are struggling to make music money out of music.
What would you say? I interviewed Paul Gallagher, who, I mean, is obviously most well known for being Liam and Noel's brother, but actually he's made a career as a DJ touring around the world. And his view was that, firstly, transport. He DJs via CDs, which kind of made me die a little bit inside when he said that. But he said transporting it around and that kind of thing is an absolute nightmare.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a vinyl DJ and I get laughed at by CD DJs. For having a bad back, essentially. But you know,
because they're precious and they damage. You know.
Yeah. I wouldn't get the same set. I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't do it if it was there. I just wouldn't get the same enjoyment out of it. I like the physical engagement with it. I love. It was a skill that, you know, I learned to manipulate records to be able to mix them together, and I really enjoy that. I don't get the same pleasure out of CDJs or you know, it's just not the same for me, so I'm quite happy to go with the backache for now.
And where do you play, what kind of stuff do you play, and where do you play?
Oh, absolutely random, different kinds of, I mean, I get bored if I play the same kind of music over and over again, so God, in the last 5 years I'm doing a night in Shutterbug in Shoreditch, where I play sort of funk, soul, disco, rare groove. I've had a rock night called Bend Over, I'll Drive, where I play purely metal, punk, old rock and roll songs about sex, essentially. Mm-hmm. I play in the Ace Hotel lobby, and in there I play sort of jazz soundtracks, some very esoteric and unusual stuff, a bit of kraut rock. I play in clubs, disco, essentially disco, synth pop, a bit of house. I've got an enormous passion for music, so if I get bored if I do the same thing over and over again. I love DJing, I love making people dance and making people happy, and generally I think most of my stories are probably too debaucherous to relate to on a podcast.
We can put an 18 sign on there. Okay, so it's been argued, we sit here the day after the Record Store Day, that the Record Store Day has been hijacked by major labels. What is your response to that? What's your stance on that?
Well, I've read the negative press, and even in the negative press, there's some positive press, because I think even the negative commentator is going to appreciate what it's done to help us out. But yes, there is an element of that. There's an element of prices being inflated to an extent. I don't feel that needs to be inflated too. And also there's some sort of lack of imagination about the titles sometimes, that they're trying to make money out of another reissue of the same thing. But there are still quite a lot of releases that are genuinely quite exciting. And you know, it's always been a battle between the sort of artful side of music and the capitalist money making side of music. Mm-hmm. And it's a constant battle, it always has been.
Where will the record store industry be in 20 years?
I'd love to think that there'd be more record shops, they'd be back in touch with the community, they get involved with the community in other ways. I mean, there's shops like Pie and Vinyl that sell pies and vinyl. I mean, in my time between record shops, I nearly opened an old school pub that sold records. I see diversification. I'd like to see them sort of putting on bands more and getting involved in that. I mean, we do that a lot at our store, and we have sort of stores and unusual occurrences and experiences, and I'd like to see them part of the community like they used to be, because not for any sort of retrospective looking back at history with rose tinted glasses, because I think they can be of importance and value to people sort of in their community. And I think you know, culturally, and I think it's an exciting place to go for young people.
What do you hope the legacy will be of Sister Ray Records? I mean, do you have any particular ambitions specifically you want to go back and what do you think the legacy
I'd like to see Sister Ray carry on to expand, and I'd like to see some more Sister Ray stores. I'd like to see more people buying records. I'd like to see the positivity continue. And yeah, I think we're going to be involved with it no matter what.
Good stuff, good to hear. Okay, I mean, we'll wrap up there. I think where the quality of product in this day and age is often sacrificed as a result of the consumer wanting something either for free or condensed, something that's easier to transport and more accessible, I'd just say kudos to you for ignoring those distractions and continuing to ensure the quality products are still readily available to allow people to experience true works of art should they choose to.
Thank you very much, Chris.
So kudos to you for that. So other DJ sets and events taking place at Sister Ray, where can we find out about that?
You should find out about that on our Twitter, which is at Sister Ray Ace.
We will check that out. Thank you for your time today.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me. It's been
fun. Cheers, Ryan. Thanks very much.
Cheers, mate.